Hello, you're back with the Geek Whisperers on our very first live podcast. This is Matthew Brender.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And we are, for the first time since starting this podcast, all sitting next to each other, speaking into one beautiful Yeti microphone, and thinking about what sort of devious things we'll be up to at EMC World.
Well, thanks for having us here. You know, one thing that I've noticed now that we're all standing, we're actually sitting right now, but we all stood around and talked, we're actually all really tall.
We are.
That's a requirement. When people say, how do you become a Geek Whisperer? Platform heels if you're under 5'8". I'm sorry.
Absolutely, and Yeti microphones at home.
Yeah, that seems to be the two.
And let's do left-handed, right-handed.
Left-handed.
Right.
Left.
Odd man out.
In the middle. And ironically, Matt's in the middle right now, so that seems to work. We're both going to elbow
you. We're balanced. We're very balanced. We're like a nice meal. That's irrelevant. But we've got great things to talk about. I mean, we're in the space. It's the EMC Elect space. It's the first time we've ever done something like this. It's an adaptation of the blogger space where we really calling out our influencers. And we're hanging out in a corner, and we've just been talking about social strategy. So let's just jump right into it.
Hey, I got a question first,
Matt. Oh, please.
So this is the blogger space. VMworld has a blogger space, too, which I stole the idea from EMC, actually. A couple years back.
Wow, I thought we stole it from you.
No.
I'm stealing it from both of you, just
so
for the record.
My question is this a standard thing at conferences? Because I don't go to a lot of conferences, but I don't actually know.
It is becoming more and more standard. Even at a small conference, it is just like a social media plan is a must for a conference. I think you have to have a blogger's table, at the very least to have connectivity. And power.
Okay.
That makes sense. Like, there's always going to be that sense of aggregation where people want to get together, they want to interact with other people that are influential, but honestly, I've been...
And they want some bandwidth.
And they want some damn bandwidth. Yeah. I've only been to the Tier 1 shows, so VMworld, VMware Partner Exchange, Cisco Live, and EMC World, so it's only... all of those have some sort of social hang space. I mean, the way you've adapted that at VMworld. Cisco is trying. It's not there yet. Quite honestly, I know you know. So they're all a little different.
They're all different, and I think. But what's interesting to me is I think everybody has a goal of trying to reach for more of it. That's the sort of unifying theme is that we value community, and we're starting. You can see that people do value community and aggregating bloggers or influencers, because anytime people see, I think they have to see them as powerful enough to want to gather them together.
Yeah, that's true, and that's it's been a recent phenomenon. I'm interested, Interop is happening down the strip this week.
Yes.
And although Interop is like 26 years old, it's really the outcome of the original IP Interop testing
kind of meetups.
Yeah.
I had no idea until you mentioned that, and that puts it in a totally new context.
Huge history for the networking industry. But now it's run by a media company with the pros and cons that entails.
Right.
So I'm curious. That's my assignment for the week. I'm going to see if Interop has any sort of blogger space or how they approach social media.
Interesting. Yeah.
No idea.
Great task.
I mean, so let's jump into it. When we say we're clearly advocates of social, but there are others that may or may not mandate social as a prerequisite to coming to a show that's tier one like EMC World. So what are the pros and cons to having a flat mandate? Everyone must be social, aka they all must have Twitter profiles, basically.
And so, are you saying that the company mandates that its employees have to have a social presence?
Yes, I'm saying that exactly. And in this case, just for the sake of this, potential argument, let's just say it's on Twitter.
Okay.
And we're actually also saying it's a personal presence versus corporate?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. There will always be those branded accounts, but they're saying, no, each individual, you are all powerful and you should all be out there.
Because there are here at this show, for instance, there are hundreds of sponsors all tweeting stuff about their booth and things like that.
Oh,
but
sure.
That's not what we're talking about, right?
No, absolutely not, because I find that about as interesting as you do.
It gets annoying. It's loud. It's a little loud.
Well, you're allowed to.
This is a marketplace.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a marketplace.
We're all pitching something, so it's not a problem to actually sell something. We all know we're all selling something.
Oh, boy. I don't know. Amy, you're the one that's always talking about you can lead horses to water, but you're really not in the... Your job is not to... As a horse waterer.
Yes.
I have tried... to get people doing social for 8 years. And my track record, if somebody doesn't want to drink the Kool-Aid, is not good.
Yeah.
So I'm of the opinion, don't force it. Forcing it just leads to disaster.
But, like, think about it a little differently, though, John. Like, you're, while you are absolutely an authority within the community, you might not be a source of authority in those given conversations. Imagine your CEO, for example, just said, all right, if you want to go to VMworld, if you work for VMware, you must be on Twitter. I mean, is that something that you would find at least interesting, or
would
it
provide you air cover? Just, yeah. I mean, bluntly, would it make it easier for you to accomplish your goal if you had air cover at that sea level?
Yes, that would that would be interesting. I just don't think that some people take to it and some people don't.
Yeah,
and so I just don't think that the people that don't take to it, I'm not sure that they would be effective.
Yes, no, I mean they wouldn't be effective.
So should they go to the show? Is that the skill set you need at the show? Oh, I'm playing for stakes.
Interesting. Yeah, because a lot of jobs at the show are to be a subject matter expert and stand at a booth for 4 hours a day.
Okay, well,
and
here's
answer questions.
Well, here's my hypothetical. So you've got two candidates, and candidate A is 100% at the tech level, very good technically, and pretty good with customers.
Okay.
Candidate B is 80% technical, and also pretty good with the customers, but very active and social. So you're going to give up 20% technical prowess, but you're going to gain social.
At the show.
At the show.
Yeah, it's going to depend on your position at that show. I would say if you've got somebody, if you're going at the 101 level of classes that we do here, the introduction to VNX or the introduction to VPlex, something like that, you don't have to be a technical genius to present that. I could probably do that by reading it over and over for a little bit. But when you get those big ones, when you've got those ones, you're going to deep dive, and you want to make sure that you've got, you need that one person that is kind of bulletproof, that is in the background.
Yeah. Let me ask you to take a slightly different way.
Sure.
So, Amy, in your hypothetical.
Yes.
Is the purpose? Well, why are we actually? Let's take it back. Let's take it back. Let's take it back one step. Why are we mandating social? Is it because you are more likely to connect with people at the show, or is it because you are more likely to have a footprint outside the show?
My argument. I'm obviously setting up the hypothetical, and leading the witnesses here. I am of an advocate that you should choose the 80% technical, high social footprint, because it's not just within the show itself. I think we can, as a brand, do a lot to drive people toward the booth, toward activities, toward our message during the show, through a lot of organic things. That's quality of presentations. It's, care spent in making an engaging booth and luring people in with both, tricks of the trade, but also good, genuine content. I think in the end, content and information is king and queen.
Well,
but I think that the social footprint gets you that 5X outside of the four walls of any event. And I think that's where the value is actually measurable. I won't say immeasurable, but it is actively measurable. I know. I'm the metrics person. Everyone pass out.
Wow, awesome.
I know.
Oh,
like,
wow. Role changes.
Well, and I'm going to back up one step and do a true confession here, that I just went to our booth staff meeting, and I do a little song and dance every time about you should be on Twitter, and here's why. It's good for listening. And I'm admittedly a strong advocate of this position. I've been thinking a lot about it this week. It's something we here at the Geek Whisperers have talked about. And I'm presented with this audience. We have this great staff. I see all these awesome folks in front of me. And I just look out of the crowd and said, if you're not on Twitter, you should be. And here's why. And look at all of us. Imagine that 5 to 10 more of us in this crowd were on Twitter and amplifying our message, how much further it would go. And there's just this visual moment. You could hear the silence. And said, we're a company full of engineers. We're good at math. So if each one of us is 3 to 5X more effective than one, that's a lot of reach. And it was a drop the mic kind of moment. It was a very interesting, you can imagine.
Yeah.
It's hard to fight math. And there was this...
It is interesting, right? There is this on-premises effect. And certainly we know that, for instance, our tech marketing folks are very social forward. And they are stars at our conferences, and people pack their sessions because of that extracurricular stuff that they do.
The fame-ishness of that. Yeah.
But I was going to argue next that, well, who cares? Like, we're about to throw off a huge amount of chaff and exhaust this week because we're going to, where are you? And I'm having a drink, and let's go meet up, and where's my waffles? All that sort of stuff. So, which is not very valuable True. To people outside the show.
Yes.
On the other hand, it's a really interesting... It is an interesting brand presence.
Yes, but imagine...
Well, it has a branding effect.
Just going back to the math for a second, I mean, we're in day one of EMC World, and I've gotten 15 new followers, all related to being at the show and talking about it, even though I sent something out being like, you probably want to mute me for the next week, and here's how,
yeah.
because I'm going to be noisy. But there's something about that, like, when we're plugged in, people come to us and start relying on us to know what's happening, where, what's exciting, how exciting is it, and compare it, and they trust our opinions in this way where, like, you can't buy that kind of opportunity to connect with people, but they have been watching us over and over, and we've consistently showed up, as we've talked about, and we've consistently been ourselves and trustworthy, and you can't build that except by showing up and doing that. And there's something about just doing that on Twitter that works.
And it's so you've moved then from 3X to 5X. So 1X, you are great at your job, but you don't push it past your immediate self. You have one-on-one relationships, but you don't scale. 3X, you're on Twitter, you're slightly active. 5X, you've earned the trust of the community. And my argument then is, even if you're 80% at technical, then your 5X capacity means that more people will fill your room. So people can support you in building your presentation. They can support you. They can co-panel with you. You can use that 5X person in interesting ways to drive your message further within the show and outside the show.
Yeah, and I'm also thinking about it in a slightly different way, and getting away from the numbers and actually thinking about the logic of it, where we've been shooting a lot of video here with whiteboards. And I think the difference between being on social and not is, like, just streaming that video live and not saving it versus streaming it and then trying to use it later online. I mean, there's a clear advantage to saving it, using it, and repurposing as much as possible. And all the content we're creating, all the excitement we're creating, all the introductions to people, like, we might connect on LinkedIn, but the conversation doesn't happen there. It happens on Twitter. And in order to continue that momentum in the same way we want to reuse our content, we need to have a platform to do it. And the universal platform of choice thus far that I've seen has been Twitter.
Can you, Amy, when you're doing your Engineers Unplugged, can you correlate views and spread with the social footprint of the people involved?
I don't know if I should let everyone know, but I did actually do a clout poll on everybody that had been on the show because I was curious. And I think everybody, if you not know my position on clout, I'm not a clout fan, but I think it measures badly equally. So,
yeah.
So that caveat, I did it because I was curious if there was a correlation. And in some cases, there was. I can say there is a distinct correlation between people who are known. But it also, it's not just people who are known, but people who are known and got behind the topic and pushed. So that added effort. So clout helped, push helped, and content helped. So there were people who weren't necessarily the most well-known folks, but they had a content piece that was really interesting. In one case, we had people who had clout who pushed it, and another company found this asset, and it was useful to them too. So it's useful for us, and it was useful for them, and that's the happiest place. And they told me, they wrote to me and said, we're using this as an asset. And
awesome. You mean you actually still have to have interesting content?
I know.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Crap.
Crap. All right, we got to go, John.
Well, okay.
Go for it.
At the end of this the day, though, I'm going to be a little bit contrarian. There's many people that come to the show. I don't know. I saw the VMware. There must be 50 or 60 people here from VMware at the show.
Wow.
Lab, we've got executives here. I've got we've got lab captains here. I got people at the SE show.
Sure.
I got people at the, all the stuff. I'm here. I don't even know why I'm here. So
I know why you're here.
So, and then we have marketing managers, and we have event managers. We have people manning the booth.
I hear you.
So do they all need to be tweeting?
I think the more people you can convince, again, to counter that, I think the more you have, the better. And I would say those people can come from any walk of the business. And this is where we get into the horse watering concept. Maybe somebody, I don't know, in social media is actually interested in being that kind of outward voice. And that person can drive traffic back to the people who are more technical. You can create a symbiosis. So maybe somebody who is super technical is very gifted in social, and you lean on them.
Yeah, but also I'm just thinking, like, the marketing managers, the event people. I've actually always thought it would be interesting to do the behind the scenes of going to an event and covering the event. Like, here's the VMware crew coming to EMC World, and this is everything that was involved. That could be actually fascinating content.
That would be
and that's hitting what social does so well.
But we don't don't do it.
So, well, yeah. I mean, that
John
would
just
be
took a sign up for a new project. That's what I heard.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Okay.
But the idea of transparency, I mean, that's why we enjoy social so much. Like, you can't filter it. There's no filter.
Like it's our own reality TV.
It is.
But what do you think?
Way.
Like, if I'm being tougher and make you answer this question, is it candidate A at 100% tech? Is it candidate B at 80% with social?
Well, you know.
Arbitrary
numbers. You're asking people who believe in social, so.
Well, but you think social is worth? Worth having in the mix. So would you say at least one person? I would argue if you're small.
Given that false dichotomy, I would go with the one with the social footprint for all the reasons we talked about. Yeah. But when I actually think about some of the most effective people on social, they're 100% on their technical as well.
So there are
some people that just shine.
There's a correlation, oftentimes.
We're actually getting away from the point of, is it a blanket statement? Is it something everyone should be doing?
And I'm going to say yes. I think it should be mandated.
Really?
I do. I think that you should... I think it should be... You have to do it in the hiring process. So I think you look for talent that meets these criteria.
Mm-hmm.
And especially as you're filling roles that you know are likely to be customer-facing, outward-facing, traveling. I think that you hire for it and you reward it. I do. So mandate might be a little strong.
Oh, but hire and reward.
But hire and reward and move toward that idea of giving that executive air cover. If I was the CEO for a day, I think I would push for that. I do.
And I just really dig the corroboration. You know, I can shout from my little totem pole here and say, yeah, social's working for me. See how it works, how it could work for you. And I continue to do that. And that resonates with a certain group of people. There are another group of people that really, they're not going to do it unless they're pushed really hard by somebody way above them.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. Like, it gives them a reason to care. And if somebody has to care a little bit, I can take the next step and make them care about something that they actually already care about. But until they actually want to put that energy into caring and seeing what it does and what it doesn't do, you can't do anything with them.
Yeah. Someday we should have a show on social and recruiting.
Ooh, that's a great call.
And talk about, for instance, recruiters.
Well, that's not going to be this show, John.
Recruiters, recruiters on Twitter, because I've seen it done... well, and I see it done not so well.
Oh, amen.
Again, going to my point that not everybody needs to be social.
Very true. Well, let's switch gears a little. I mean, we're tweeting wildly, all agreed on that. But there's certain hashtag strategies that we're using. Like, we've done a couple of different things at this show. What do you think of hashtag strategies, team?
Yeah, it's a good point. Once you've got people on board, you know, what do you do with them there? And I would say... I'm for a hashtag strategy, especially I think at events is where a hashtag really shines.
One of the few places a hashtag shines.
Oh, we've got the controversy already.
Well, no, it's dead on. I think
people get really confused about hashtags.
True.
I've seen tweets where every word is a hashtag. They think they're magic or something.
Yeah, well, I think there's the false expectation.
That's a prescribe tweet if I've ever heard one. Just saying. Hashtag just saying.
Well, let's talk about jump hashtags in a second.
Yeah, but it's talking about the serious strategy of them, you're right. Hashtags shine at events because I think when you boil down what a hashtag is designed to do, it is to have a conversation with people you don't know and to be able to follow it.
It is a virtual chat room.
It is a virtual chat room. Yeah. And to Matt's earlier point, a great point, he wrote a great post earlier, you might not want to follow any of us if we're at an event and tweeting wildly. It gives you a way to mute people politely. You don't have to unfollow. You can, but you can also just stop listening
for a bit. If your Twitter client, so the hashtag here is EMC World, so that if your Twitter client allows it, they don't all, but most of them do, you can put a mute on the hashtag
itself.
You can
put a mute on a hashtag, so you can just get rid of the whole EMC World conversation this week if you wanted to. You can put a mute on a person retweeting, which is also handy. Big shout out to Tweetbot on that one, just for being a very nice interface from an independent company. But
it does create a virtual chat room. And,
it does.
And we've seen lots of interesting things done with it. You know, big kudos to VMware and EMC, who've done these huge boards they call Twitter falls, if you're not familiar with the term.
Yeah.
So large screens where they show tweets based on that hashtag. And it really does have this, we've talked a little bit about gamification. It does reward you. It's very satisfying to see your name up in lights. They can use the content. So as a content strategist, later you can gather the content based on that hashtag. You can gather pictures from it. You can stream it. You can save it. You can archive it. You can show up on a website later. I take a lot of pictures, and I'm all over the VM world. I Instagrammed
streams.
Pictures. Yeah. There's my dinner. It's well placed on the VMworld site. And I do believe in that. I do believe in a hashtag strategy.
Sure. Yeah, and if you actually have something to talk about, let's say we're not in events, there are times that a hashtag could be useful.
How about a tweet chat?
Tweet chats are wonderful. I take part in a number of them throughout the week. I'll put it into the blog post.
Really? I'm really hoping that we're at peak tweet chat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Like, I think there's too many
of them. Tweet chat burnout?
Oh.
Yeah.
Because we had two at one time, because we have different, of course, different products and different programs.
Sure.
You know, we had, I think a couple weeks ago, we had two or three going on at once.
See, that's content strategy and the content calendar idea.
I don't control their content.
I know, that's the problem.
They all have agencies, and the agencies are all, like, have all these ideas. I don't like tweet chats.
Hashtag just saying.
No, so. I don't love tweet chats. That's a different topic.
Sure. Well, let's talk about the joke tweet. I mean, John, you were saying that people get a little confused sometimes.
Well, okay. There are joke hashtags, but that's just a modern affectation.
Yeah.
The hip hop people. I was reading even the New York Times or something, some article there's a style of rapping now where you give a phrase and then you give one appositional word, which is like a hashtag, and they attributed it to the rise of the hashtag.
Oh, wow.
It's like a whole hip-hop flow thing.
Well, and what's interesting to me, my old web development brain kicks in, and it's a form of information architecture. So the positive hashtags, you know, an actual proper strategy, you're filing things in buckets. So like we talked about, you're creating virtual chat rooms. So the joke hashtags, even they have subculture. Yeah. So there are joke hashtags that are common. So as you learn the language of Twitter, there are things like we've joked around using them now, like just saying, or there are a few, that's a common, first world problems.
Yeah, world problems is my favorite.
And it's a way to sort of make a little bit of fun of yourself.
It's a colloquial. I mean, we're building our own linguistics within the community.
And it's tone in 140 characters. So you can convey a lot by deploying one of these shared joke hashtags.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's the...
it's like shorthand.
It is like shorthand.
Yeah.
And then you've got the other category where... And I'm terribly guilty of this. I've been called out. I hashtag in real life and in text messages because I cannot resist. Because there's something so ridiculous about it, I cannot stop myself. And you just make something up. And I have to say, when you get in that playful mood and you're having that conversation, you can say some things that are, you can take the sting out of things. I don't know why putting a pound sign in front of something makes it, there's a little more levity.
But it's almost a thought bubble.
Yeah.
It's almost a Greek chorus that's commenting on your comment.
Yes, yes.
It gets very meta and joking and personal, but also, like, not attacking. Like, everyone knows you're all playing the same joke with each other.
Because it's so ridiculous.
It's safe.
And it's creative. I think it's interesting, too.
That's it.
Some folks, like, might be more introverted, might be more shy, really shine in this form of humor. Because it's very dry wit at a certain point. Not to get so technical on this, but it's interesting to see personality coming out of folks you may not suspect. So, I like them.
There's something, what is it that, we talked about this a couple times, but such a big chunk of doing well on Twitter is having a sense of humor. And hashtags are another way to kind of jump into that game. It's one of the many ways that you use them on there.
Shall we talk? I'd like to talk about futile hashtags for a second.
I would like to hear what your thoughts are.
If it's over 6 characters.
Well, a futile hashtag, I don't know, I just came up with that term, but it's when a...
Hashtag futile.
It's when usually a company decides that it is, and often it is around a product launch or...
Not
the event ones are pretty natural.
Yeah.
But it's like around a product launch, and it often involves your slogan. Like, your slogan is like faster, bigger, stronger. And your whole launch is around that, and that's your theme. You spend a lot of money on signs.
Wait, those aren't joke tweets?
Faster, bigger, stronger. And so your hashtag, you're like, okay, we're going to tweet out all of the information around this product launch. Maybe we even have a streaming doohickey going on. And everything's going to be hashtag faster, bigger, stronger.
But also the hashtag of the brand.
And and probably hashtag company name.
And the event.
And
that's where it gets ridiculous.
Even with the bigger, faster, stronger, no one else on the planet is going to use that except you, the employees of your company. And therefore, you can use it to track retweets, which is interesting, but you can track retweets if they have a link in them anyway. So you don't actually need it to track the retweets, but somehow people think they need to invent some sort of proprietary term, or this. They think the hashtag is somehow people are going to like pick it up virally and start.
Yes, it is the new viral. We're going to make it go viral. Anybody who tells me they've got a hashtag like, that's going viral,
told me a viral video. Anything that's like, oh, we've got this viral video with this hashtag. You're just, no, it's.
I will. Okay, this is going on air. If you can prove to me that you've got a hashtag you can quote make go viral, I will buy you Bacon of the Month Club for 3 months. So anybody, game on. Like, that. This is Amy, bet on. If you can show me that you've made, I completely agree with John.
Well, yeah. And if you're doing tracking and searching, you don't even need a hashtag. You can search on any word,
that's the keyword
that exists.
That's the misappropriation. Yeah. People think in order to get quality metrics from something, you have to still use this hashtag, which is an outdated, but not very long ago, expectation of Twitter. Because the first-gen tools really focused on tracking hashtags. Now you can do such analytics on the words that are associated. You can pull together a regular expression with and ors and buts and.
But that's big listening. I will say for high listening, I agree with you. Yeah. For low listening, it is nice. And again, this is on the tweet chat level, on the show level events, that it is nice to use a shared hashtag because it makes it those tools you're using for low listening, like for personal consumer use, are not as flexible and.
But the interesting thing, I agree, it's nice to have a hashtag, but you are asking people, much like on social, you're asking people to opt in to follow you in the first place, you are asking people to use it. And so you're asking permission. And so it better be well-constructed, it better be natural, it better not be something weird, it better be something, you know, there's all these things, there's so many ways to do it, to ask someone and to do it poorly.
Oh,
and I actually, this just went off when you said that, my thinking that anytime, I'm very against creating new Twitter accounts. And I think in the same way, you're spending all your Lyft on seeding that population and getting that word out. Yeah. So if you create a hashtag that has flaws or it isn't naturally retweetable, it has problems, then you're putting all your PR Lyft, if you will, into the front 50 to 60% of just getting people to adopt and use that as opposed to think about the ideas that you're actually launching. So it's a process
instead of
a product.
Yeah. How many hashtags, since we're here at EMC World, we're using it as an example, we've made the mistake in the past of having too many hashtags.
You did last year.
One year we tried to have every session have its own hashtag, but other years that worked out okay, but there were too many of them.
Okay.
It worked out okay for certain sessions where enough people used them.
Sure, okay.
And they weren't listed in the catalog necessarily, but then... We tried tracks, but no one knows what the tracks are called.
Yeah.
So why would they use the hashtag? Again, you're back to a Franken tag or something.
Yeah.
I have a good friend that calls them smash tags.
Okay.
Where you take a bunch of ideas, you hook them all together with a hash in front of it, and magically it will be adopted. Yes.
Now, one that did go viral by itself at VMworld.
I might have to make some bacon.
Is VMworld 3-word.
VMworld
is a brilliant one. I have to
it's
say.
It's hilarious.
I might have to buy John some bacon. I'll give him credit.
But that came out of the community. Nobody invented it. In fact, I think probably Dave.
They're like Scott Lofax, though. Like, yeah, that's another one that like really took off. And it's just, it points to the community again. Like, that the community will produce what they want.
Well, and back to good content, because it's a game. So you've offered gamification with VMworld. Just to keep everybody up to date. So VMworld 3-word, I'm a huge fan too. Twitter's already 140 characters. And using the hashtag VMworld 3-word is something that people have used around VMworld, the event. And you only can have 3 words.
So the game is to describe what you're doing right now or some aspect of the event in 3 words.
Absolutely. And there's an extended version. If you're feeling crazy, there's VMworld 6-word whenever you get locked down.
Really?
Because I have a favorite story. When I entered the community, and again, referencing the leg warmer video again, but yes, and one more video, I'm getting ready to go to work to make a series of joke videos, and my friend who is shooting them with me sends out a tweet that says, "I'm bringing a ladder to work." VMworld 6-word. I'm like, OMG. and that's it. It signifies that you're playing. It signifies that you are engaging in this game. And there's something when you see that hashtag, I feel happy. I'm happy to see the tweet.
They're ingenious. They're funny.
It's like haiku.
This wittiness, and it's back to the humor of it, and the community building of just sharing a game. Sharing some sense of humor and also sharing that common experience of we're all at VMworld or we all want to be at VMworld. If we're not there, I've definitely played with 3-word remotely. remotely before, and everyone's just kind of in it. It's like, it feels very connective.
So, well, I think a conclusion we might draw from that is that hashtags that evolve organically, it's the same as good content. Good hashtags are like good content, and that you want to share it, you want to participate, and I think organic is always better than forced. I might have to go, I'll have to think more if I want to stand behind that, but I'm feeling that might be true. Yeah.
There's one more kind of hashtag, or another use for a hashtag, which is to get questions. And you guys are doing that here.
We are. We've got the hashtag EMC Backstage, and that's being used, and it's in, I think this is what differentiates it from normal, that we're both using it. There's a stage in the middle of the floor as soon as you walk on the village floor before the Solutions Pavilion, and it's just EMC Backstage, very well branded. But also on every single keynote in the slides, there's a call to action at the end saying, tweet questions to the keynote presenter.
Is it working?
It is. There's been some good
afterwards
conversation.
Afterwards, he comes over to the secondary stage and then answers these questions.
So whoever is presenting, they present, they come off stage, they come sit down with one of somebody from our CTO office, and they just get questions from the community. They're read live.
It's kind of like Oprah after the show.
I was going to say Oprah. I think actually that's why the fact that John and I both had that eureka moment, it's a cultural thing we've been branded to accept. So I think it is a model that has been created that we can follow. And I think there's an opportunity, just 2 cents, that I think all of us are struggling to do better and better mobile apps as we engage in these shows. And this is a little inside baseball, but anybody who's gone to a large show where there's 15,000 plus people, you really need some level of connectivity. And I wonder if we started to, oftentimes the group that does the mobile app is separate from the social group.
Yes.
And when that happens, they're going to be differing priorities. And I think one of the real opportunities there is to embed some of these hashtag strategies. Maybe they are organic, but they bubbled up. Let some of the winners rise, embed them into your mobile, and then make it easier for everybody to participate.
And so we have that this year with the hashtag EMC World. There's an updated leaderboard in real time of who's used the hashtag the most since the beginning of the show. And I can tell you, like, I've seen dozens of picture tweets just talking about, like, woo, I just popped up another level. Like, people are just naturally, playfully competitive here, and they're taking advantage of it with a good mobile experience. Cool. And with all of that, from mandating social to going back to the hashtag strategy, I think, you know, we've spent a good amount of time talking to our listeners. Any final thoughts on what you're feeling at the event today, John, Amy, before we sign off?
Well, I have something about that. I want to ask questions. We've been getting some great comments. We've been getting some amazing engagement on Twitter. So we always want to hear your thoughts. So if you have thoughts about whether it should be mandated, or if you want to share with us success or not in a hashtag strategy, we really want to hear from you. So we'll go through the things where we can be found, but just I always like to leave that open. Thank you for.
Yeah, likewise. Also, if you have any good ideas from your conferences that you've been working on or have been attended, I'd love to hear them, because all good ideas, great artists steal.
Yep. We're all standing on the shoulders.
Just saying. We're going to take your ideas. Steal this podcast, I think, will be the...
Steal this podcast. Perfect. And with that, just want to thank you for listening. Hope you enjoy the live, raw edition of the Geek Whispers. And this is us signing off.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.